Greetings, friends and listeners. Welcome to episode 22 of The Gentle Rambler. Thank you all for tuning in, for supporting me, and also for those of you who participated in this week's topics poll. I'm once again on the same page as the majority of my listeners, as we're going to focus on income inequality, as well as a bit on police brutality that I'll get to later in the show. I stated on my interview with Voluntary Input host and friend Leo Allen's show back in July that if I was a politician, that would be the most important issue that I would push for reforms. And when I say reforms, I'm talking radical changes in the problem that currently, in my opinion, most poisons our society. Because whatever race, gender, or religion you happen to be or associate with, this particular matter affects all of us. Let's begin with the failure of this nation's leadership and the capitalist economic model. I remember a few years back was the Fight for 15, meaning in cities and states all around America, protests were revolving around raising the minimum wage, in some cases doubling what was at that time considered living wages. Presently, due to growing sentiment and displeasure over the continually expansive income gap, a general strike is being promoted through a grassroots social media campaign, which is tentatively scheduled for October 15th. I've mentioned on several previous shows and editorials that I've never been much of an active protester, but as I have stated before, this is one demonstration I would not only participate in by not showing up to my underpaid and underappreciated day job. I aim to be on the front lines in the actual outdoor protests. Despite my usual hesitation to be amongst an immense crowd, I sure hope this is one where hundreds of thousands attend. Social anxiety be damned. See, as I remember, the Occupy Wall Street thing, which was originally, I really felt meant something, until it unfortunately became a Union Square hangout for drifters mostly. Because I'm sure most of you do recall what went down in the years following the recession of 2008. Unemployment rates reached over 12% in 2009. Now, Barack Obama, as we know, bailed out the same Wall Street banks that, with their actions of greed and mismanagement, helped create that economic malaise, along with the hundreds of billions of dollars wasted by the W. Bush administration on a useless illegal war in Iraq, which at the time was supposed to be for oil. But if my memory serves me right, gas prices were like $4.25 a gallon during the days after the financial crisis. So was it really for that? What we did learn, the war was started and drawn out to make millions off of defense corporations. And really, they're doing the same thing now. You know what I find amusing? Our government thinks we're stupid. They really think all of us are incapable of doing our due diligence to find out what's really going on. I really hope more people do the research on how not just the working class, we've all heard the 1% motto, and it's still true. Nothing changed with 8 years of a so-called progressive president, which, look, in some ways I like Barack Obama. He had a high intellect, carried himself with an understated dignity that you don't normally see from politicians these days, but he was more or less a banker in sheep's clothing. So not much change for the working class, the underclass, so to speak. We had 4 years of Donald Trump. Now, for all his narcissism, racist overtones, and failure to act in the COVID-19 pandemic, his billionaire tax breaks really was perhaps his most consequential policy during his presidency. Do you know that Elizabeth Warren, along with this economist, I can't think of his name, but that's not what's important. A key takeaway from this study was the really insulting statistics that were discovered. And the one that should anger most anyone is 400 of the richest Americans currently have a 23% tax rate, which I guess means 23% of their earnings. Get this, lower than half, the bottom half, excuse me, American households currently pay 24%. Think about it. Jeff Bezos, in a sense, pays less income tax than all of us. Is Joe Biden going to get on this monstrosity of a tax structure, or is he going to fucking fall asleep again? I mean, I hate to seem like I'm picking on Biden for being of an advanced age, because all of us who voted for him were more than aware that could be an occupational hindrance. But the blame really has to fall on his last four predecessors. Bill Clinton with his shipping jobs and corporations overseas, which really came back to bite us in the ass, that one did. And the horrendous welfare to work bullshit, which you can learn a lot about by watching Michael Moore's 2000 masterpiece, Bowling for Columbine. Now, as I remember, they had a scene in that movie. It was a single mother, and she was forced to work at this, like, stupid mall in Michigan that Dick Clark owned, the American Bandstand or whatever. And, you know, the bus ride to work was 3 hours. You know, by the time it was a 12-hour workday, basically. And her son was in, like, first, second grade. And, you know, her uncle was taking care of the son in the morning, you know, helping him get ready for school. And the uncle, well, he was no angel. So, long story short about the scene. So the boy somehow got his hands on, I guess, his uncle's firearm, brought it to school, and shot one of his classmates. Now, we're talking about a first, second grader here. Now, I don't want to give away the movie, but that part was traumatizing to say the least. And I really recommend that movie. It's a great documentary on that time. And that part of the movie was really affecting, and I really recommend you guys watch that. I would like to speak more about that whole welfare to work thing, do a little more research on it, what's going on currently there. But anyway, moving on. So, and of course, you know, we mentioned George W. Bush with his fiscally damaging war of aggression in Iraq and his just uncanny ability to have no idea what to do about anything. I mean, it seemed almost comical at the time, because when the media and general public would harass him about the war and the state of the working class, he'd basically come out and just say, "We got a war on terror going. I don't give a shit about any of you and your real problems, and how do you like that?" And again, Barack with his bailouts, which damaged his credibility with true progressives who saw right through the facade. Now, it did bring us out of the recession at the time, but we're seeing the drawback from that pro-Wall Street policy even now. And of course, Donald Trump, whom, listen, never gave a shit about anyone but himself and a few of his rich friends. So what did we really think would happen there? So Joe Biden, before you have like massive strikes, large-scale work stoppages, which I hope October 15 becomes, and will continue to grow in time until something is done about the atrocity of this ultra-capitalist system that we, meaning the working class, have become victims of. Let's do it, folks. Get out there. Especially those of you who are in unions and strong unions. Use your solidarity to get out there with all the rest of us working folk. And not thumb your nose at us for not having the, quote, luxury of being in a union. Not only participate in this, but set the example and be the standard bearer. And not take a paid sick day on October 15th, but really don't show up for work. If you union people out there want to truly represent the workforce, then get out there and get with us, man, because we're all in this together. We're all not getting fair pay. And even if you feel you are, remember that statistic that Jeff Bezos is paying less taxes than you. That alone should get you a bit aggravated. Because I remember when I was in the, you know, Teamsters, and by the time I paid my $76 a week medical insurance and outrageous amounts of state, federal, and whatever the fuck else taxes, it felt half my earnings were taken from me. And I'm sure it's worse now than it even was back in 2015. And I'm going to get back to that a bit later. You know, while I was preparing for this show, I was intent on doing the proper preparation for the income inequality and police brutality aspect of the show. Also, I want to mention a great buddy of mine through social media was to be a guest. He's a very bright and worldly fellow named Ben Stevenson. He's actually a union organizer and broadcaster, and he'll be on next week when I do my post-Brexit UK show. And I'm also in the process of making a bit of a change, because dig this. The last few interview tries I've had really poor technical problems, a lot of feedback, unexplained whistling sounds. I don't want to sound, you know, paranoid, but maybe it's being done purposely. I don't know. But I don't want to get off topic. Now, the 9/11 terror attack. It's Saturday evening here in New York, and I've been listening to so many opinions and thoughts about that day and the weeks, months, and years following. Now, I remember that day quite well. I was a senior in high school at the time, and, you know, where I grew up, it was on the Eastern Palisades, as they call it. You know, they have a Western Palisades by Los Angeles. You know, we have like we had a perfect view of was like Midtown Manhattan, and, you know, you could see the towers. You know, it was a little more north, but you know, you had a perfect view of it. You know, it was very close by. And I remember I was in, you know, first period, as they say, you know, first class of the day. I remember the first tower, I guess, had already got hit. So, you know, the teacher had the television on. Everybody's watching it. You know, I was usually late for class, you know, of course, especially at that time. But anyway, so, you know, I remember when the second plane hit, you know, you could almost, now I've never been in an earthquake, but, you know, you could almost feel like a vibration from the, you know, from the plane hitting there. And then, you know, everybody watched the towers collapse. And actually, I had a classmate who lost a brother in the second tower. And so, you know, I had another friend whose brother happened to work in the area. Luckily, he was unharmed. But, you know, so it's a personal thing for a lot of us who lives in the area. And then, you know, after the attacks and everything, and they had to clean up, and Miss Christy Whitman, who some of you might know, you know, she told everybody it's everything's fine. There's no poisonous gases or anything. Anything to worry about cleaning up down there. And then all those poor guys and girls, they all started, you know, coming down with mesothelioma, all sorts of lung cancers and everything. And the government wasn't paying for their medical expenses. You know, it was like they were being forced to pay for their own. These are people that were trying to save, you know, possible survivors, digging bodies out of the rubble. And the government wanted them to use their, I don't know, whatever, medical or insurance to pay for them getting cancer, for trying to save survivors. What a country, huh? And then there was this Droga fella. He was one of the earlier guys who, you know, unfortunately passed away from the cancer, you know, from mesothelioma. And, you know, there's a lot of New York, well, not just New York, but celebrities were going to Congress and, you know, vouching for these guys and girls who were getting these horrible cancers. And eventually they came up with this Droga Act. You know, after years of you know, harassing these politicians to take care of these, you know, heroes, and finally they came up with something, and they no longer have to pay. But you know, they, so many guys maybe perished or suffered who didn't have to. So you know, the wars perpetrated by George Bush, Dick Cheney, you know, that was all part of it. But one thing I also want to talk about is that they got this like 9/11 museum, which I feel is a kind of an unfortunate memorial, because, you know, you got smiling tourists taking pictures beside a fountain constructed on a mass grave. Me personally, when I think of the victims, though, I always sympathize most with the janitors, security guards, plumbers, and such. Of course, the police and firemen showed amazing courage. But let me say this with as much respect as I can. I mean, they did sign up for those jobs knowing at some point their lives could become expendable to save others. And this is, in, you know, in no way meant to be like a slight. But what were they to do? Tuck tail and run in the opposite direction? I mean, think about it. How would that have looked? New York City's bravest and finest sprinting in the opposite direction towards the Brooklyn Bridge to get out of harm's way, abandoning innocent victims in the face of cowardice. I mean, even wacko Rudy Giuliani was storming through the rubble. So what is the lasting legacy of September 11th terrorist attacks? Is it the call to arms and humanity showed by New Yorkers and most of the world in the immediate aftermath? Is it the long-lasting hunt and eventual killing of the so-called mastermind of these attacks, Osama bin Laden? Is it shock and awe and the made-for-TV G.W. Bush mission accomplished aircraft carrier landing, which was about 14 years early, mind? I'm going to take that two-word phrase, mission accomplished. Here's what I'll forever think of when pondering the hows, what, whys, and when of that incident. There ever was a mission, what was that mission really? Was it to avenge the worst terror attack on American soil in history and try to eliminate the threat of global terrorism? Perhaps, and if that's the case, can't say that mission really was accomplished, now was it? Or was it much darker mission? Meant to be accomplished by shadowy figures within the deep corners of government and corporations to stage an international atrocity for not only economic and political gain, but also to easily control society and its inhabitants by using that, what very well may have been, a planned attack to be able to pass not only unjust invasions through the American legislature, but also laws meant to erode certain freedoms from its citizens. Patriot Acts, mass surveillance, the ability of law enforcement agencies to spy on whomever they deem as a threat without probable cause. Was this the introductory event of a surveillance capital superstate in the mold of the Orwellian society portrayed in 1984? If that was the mission, it seems that one isn't really so far from being accomplished. Wow, so got in a bit of a trance there for a minute. I don't like to spread deep state conspiracies often, but it's a true statistic that half of those did like a survey, and half of those that were polled did feel that 9/11 was either possibly a conspiracy or definitely a conspiracy. And then, of course, whether you thought it certainly was not a conspiracy. Now, you could fact check this one on the web or whatever, who ran the census. So, again, saying half either answered it was possibly a conspiracy or most definitely was. And so think about that one, you know. So it's not just crazy, crazy folks out there to believe everything. That, you know, it's half people that were surveyed. So I don't want to get lumped in with, you know, the fringe groups who go around and try to prove all this crazy stuff. You know, I gave this a lot of thought. Oh, and one more quick thing. That the Zadroga fella who I mentioned earlier was actually from Kearney, New Jersey, which at the time was my adopted place of residence. So tying up this 9/11 portion of the episode in a neat little bow, I'm still on the fence here about my deep feelings about what happened 20 years ago. Got to understand, it's my hometown in a sense, so I spent a few years really, I don't want to say traumatized, but it definitely had an effect on my perception of what's real and whom the good ones or the bad ones are. And for a long time after that event, I became so utterly confused when it came to world issues and politics. I gave up on fighting against the war. Then Barack Obama got elected, and I got lured into a false sense of security. So I was basically lost in apathy. I just didn't care about much of anything. And I think that may have been one of the things that led me down the path of drug addiction, self-destruction, but whatever, this isn't about me. So final thoughts on this, if any of you out there lost a loved one on that day or after that day due to the cancer from the cleanup of Ground Zero, I offer my lasting condolences. Now the terrorists whom aren't dead and had a hand in the planning or execution of this tragedy, well, you need to read your Quran again, because I don't recall mass murder being mentioned. And lastly, you potential conspirators who may have perpetrated this, there's a special place in hell for you, and your day of judgment will arrive soon enough. Now, I did want to also speak on Syria. It's been a decade since that, that absolute travesty there. And if you'd care to, I actually did a three-part written editorial on that catastrophe, which you can find on my robertdeblasio.blogspot.com site. But so quickly, much has happened in Palestine and, of course, Afghanistan the last few months, and I just hope the international community and media, wherever else, doesn't forget about the innocent victims of that immense conflict in Syria, which has turned into one of history's worst examples of a proxy war. Let's not forget those who died, lost family members, were forced to seek refuge all over the world to most places that don't want them there. So on this special day, weekend of remembrance for the really courageous acts of our firemen, police, and first responders from 20 years ago, allow me to be the devil's advocate on this. I did say that police brutality was going to be brought up, so what better day than today when folks around not only here in the New York City area, but all around the U.S. proudly wear their NYPD apparel to remind all of them some of the innocent victims' names of police brutality. Considering, you know, the whole reading of the names ceremony they play on TV every year on September 11th. So here goes it. Michael Floyd killed Minneapolis by police officer's knee whilst handcuffed. Sean Bell, Queens, New York, killed by multiple police officers on his bachelor party, mind you. Eric Gardner, Staten Island, New York, murdered by NYPD detective by chokehold for selling untaxed cigarettes. Breonna Taylor, killed by police stray bullet in her home in Louisville, Kentucky. Akay Gurley, killed in a housing project in Brooklyn, New York, by a police stray bullet. Never saw or heard it coming. And lastly, let's not forget Amadou Diallo, stalked and murdered outside his apartment in Bronx, New York, by plainclothes police who thought he appeared suspicious and was grabbing for his New York City ID card before being shot to death 9 times. These names must not be forgotten, and the scourge of police brutality and systemic racism also must not be forgotten on this very special weekend. Because as we are reminded of bravery under fire, we also cannot forget the amount of mass killings of unarmed African Americans by police on this very particular day. Oh, and let's also not forget that only one of those police officers were held accountable for committing murder. Derek Chauvin, found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to 22 years behind bars. We can only hope that that jury's bravery to hold a killer accountable will maybe help stem the tide of police brutality a bit. Well, this has been a very meaningful show. I really wanted to focus on the income inequality topic, but I'm planning on doing a show on or around October 15th. So we're getting near the climax of this show right now. So I guess it's about time to announce the listener of the week. A true gentleman from London, England. His name is Matt Aldarab, and he's written a statement that I'll read for you now. Here goes. There's nothing more grotesque than being lectured about anti-Semitism by those who defend, support, and promote the interests of an apartheid state with a racist political ideology which privileges one ethnic group over another. You're either a racist or an anti-racist, and you cannot be both. Thank you, Matt Aldarab. You're a very bright and conscientious man, and you are much deserving of our Listener of the Week. So, well, I hope this episode was enjoyable for all of you. After last week's unfortunate turn of events with Ms. Gaddis and that, particular online magazine parading themselves as socialists, backed me into a corner and convinced me that canceling an interview with Judy, whom I got nothing but really positive vibes from, was absolutely necessary. Well, I say screw them. Ms. Gaddis, if you are listening, I would love to have you on the show one day. So anyhow, it was nice to get back to doing the show that I so thoroughly enjoy doing, despite having to talk sometimes about some very serious and upsetting issues. But that's what I chose to do. Just like how I choose to have guests on The Gentle Rambler. So on this 20th anniversary of 9/11, I would just like to say I'll always be proud to be a New Yorker. So this was Season 3, Episode 22, and I am The Gentle Rambler, and I will be signing off.